You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 539. My name is John Morgan, coming to you from the boardwalk in Atlantic City. Meanwhile, Cold Coffee is with me back in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas. And Cold Coffee, we got a lot to get into, a lot of things going on, a lot to talk about that has unfolded over the past week or so in the combat sports universe. But I would feel remiss if we did not start things at the place that may be a little bit somber, but a place that I think you have to start: the passing of an icon, of
a legend. Chuck Mangione. You know, he was a great influence of mine, you know, musically. You know, that song Feels So Good.
Chuck Mangione.
Oh, you weren't talking about him?
No, I was talking about Theo Huxtable, of course, bro. The way that Theo Huxtable – no, I don't want to minimize. These are two men that have passed. I don't want to minimize. No, I'm talking about Terry Bollea, of course, most known as Hulk Hogan, the absolute legend. And, I mean, you know what's funny? I saw the news this morning. I'll share how I saw the news this morning. We were setting up the mats. We were getting our venue ready, basically, for CFFC BJJ 14, and we were kind of laying out the mats and getting the canvas ready. And the tech guys were setting up all the audio, visual, and everything. And they were like, "Hey, we got to test out the music. If it's okay with you, we're gonna crank some Ozzy Osbourne for a little bit." And I was like, "Oh, of course you can crank some Ozzy Osbourne."
Yeah,
so I mean, here we are inside Soundwaves in Atlantic City, and I mean, No More Tears is just ripping through. I mean, they've got this. I mean, it's empty in there except for us, and they've got it turned all the way up. But everybody's just kind of feeling it, like, "Yeah, man, Ozzy legend." And then somebody pulls up on their phone, like, "Oh my God, like Hulk Hogan is dead." And you know, everybody kind of is like, "No, that can't be true. That can't be true." But that is a guy that I saw this, and it was funny because as soon as I Googled it to make sure somebody wasn't, you know, looking at some fake news or had been duped by, you know, some piece of AI or whatever, so I Googled it, and one of the first things that popped up was a tweet from Dave Meltzer, and obviously Dave Meltzer has covered MMA for a long time, but in wrestling, that's his world. And I thought this was such a great tweet. It said, "Hulk Hogan died at 71 today. He is probably the most famous pro wrestler who ever lived, and more people paid to see him perform over the course of his career than any other person. Thanks for the memories." And I thought that was so well said and true. And you know, I'm not a pro wrestling guy by any stretch of the imagination, but I always say, you know, my combat sports journey probably did start with pro wrestling, because when I was a little kid, I really did. You know, Saturday night's main event, like, I loved it. And it wasn't until I found out that it was scripted that I kind of shied away from it and blah, 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 the full circle. But regardless of where you stand in your fandom on professional wrestling, like, Hulk Hogan is legit an icon, a legend, like one of the most recognizable people on the face of the planet.
Yeah. When I think about pro wrestling as a kid, you know, there was a lot of names that sort of, you know, come to the surface of guys that were beloved, you know, the Junkyard Dog, Randy, you know, Macho Man Savage, all these guys, Randy Rhodes. But when it comes to the guy who stood atop the hill. I mean, it was Hulk Hogan, 100%. His persona, the look, his stick, everything about it was, you know, I can still remember it clear as day. I mean, like, it was almost like when you had, I had this friend down the street that had, like, the little, some of the wrestling, like, dolls, and when everybody played, it was like,
oh, yeah.
You knew who everybody was grabbing. You knew who everybody wanted to try to be.
Yep.
And no matter what little match that you would make up, obviously Hulk Hogan always came out on top, you know,
yep.
Just the way that it was, you know. So, you know, I, like yourself, you know, grew out of, you know, professional wrestling as a kid. You know, I still appreciate it now. I appreciate it now for its physicality. I appreciate the choreography and what these cats do. I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's a whole nother level, you know. And we've talked about it over the years that regardless of whether you like it or not, you have to give respect to what these athletes do in there. You know, they do so much. But to think about that time as a kid, you know, there it was, I mean, who didn't envision, you know, wrestling or fighting like him? Who hasn't tried to rip open one of your shirts and thought about when the Hulk did it? You know what I mean? Like, he was the one that did it first, you know? So, you know, I know as years went on, you know, the perception of him has changed over the years.
Definitely.
And, you know, and certainly his alignment with, you know, certain political sides has definitely tweaked some people.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, everybody makes mistakes in their lives and does some dumb shit. And, you know, I know he certainly lost favor in the years, you know, as I got older, I stopped paying attention as much. But when I take that all aside and think about what he gave to us, especially as a kid growing up in those formative years, I'll always be appreciative of what he did. I mean, he was such an entertainer. I mean, he was, I guess, if anything, the first entertainer that you could think of that I found myself wanting to see.
Yep.
Every week when something
yep.
was on. You know, every time that there was a wrestling show, I was like, oh, is Hulk going to be there? Without realizing that he couldn't be on every one, but you just wanted him to be on every one, you know.
It's funny, man, because, you know, like, I'm like you. You know, I felt like I kind of grew out of wrestling, but now, I mean, obviously, I embrace it again. I mean, obviously, you know, working with CM Punk for many years, obviously, I tune in anytime I get a chance to watch him, and that's kind of made me just enjoy the genre as a whole. But to me, like, I think a big part of it was, so I kind of drifted away, and then as MMA started to rise, you know, I kind of lived in that era when people were like, wait a minute, is this real, or is this
pro real?
Wrestling?
Yep.
And so for me, I used to think it was very, very important that, hey, man, we can't lean into anything that's pro wrestling in the mixed martial arts world because people are struggling to determine what's real and what's not.
Yep.
But now here we are 30-plus years later, and I don't think there's a person on earth that doesn't understand that a mixed martial arts fight is a real fight. You know, the tagline, as real as it gets. Obviously, that was the whole idea, was to make people understand this is real. But now it's like I almost think that mixed martial arts, of course, it's about the training, it's about the fighting, it's about the wins and losses, but we know it's about entertainment as well. And I feel like if you're a fighter and a successful fighter or want to be a financially successful fighter, you probably should watch at least a little bit of pro wrestling and get a little bit of that. Because you think about it, we're talking about Hulk Hogan, and I like what you said. I always hate to be disrespectful of anybody, at most times any, but especially in passing. But obviously, you know, you touched on some of the things. He was not necessarily universally loved in his later years for some of the things that happened behind the scenes. But that persona, that character, you know, his ability to just captivate an entire crowd and to get everybody cheering for him or against him in the later days when he became a
yeah.
heel. You know what I mean? Like, the ability to control an audience, to captivate, to utilize the moments on the mic, it's so big. And you look at, like, two of the most successful people, you know, in kind of the combat sports space outside of just fighting, Daniel Cormier, Chael Sonnen, you know, both huge pro wrestling guys, and you look at what they've been able to do with their career, which didn't necessarily have to always do with wins and losses, and then what they've been able to do beyond it. So I guess that's a long way of saying, if I was a fighter, I would tell a fighter, embrace the pro wrestling world. Like, watch those pro wrestlers, watch the successful ones, and learn of how they handle a microphone, of how they pause and enunciate and deliver things in certain ways and don't
yep.
step on it. And Punk is actually really – I noticed Punk's really good about that, even in just, like, his post – which makes sense. I mean, you think about, this is what he does for a living. But, like, a post-fight interview with a fighter, right? Like, he'll pause. You know what I mean? Like, if the
yep.
crowd is yelling or they're saying something, like, he'll just stop mid-sentence in his question, realizing, like – don't step on the moment. Let the moment evolve. You know what I mean? And that's obviously just years and years and years of him doing exactly that. But anyway, it all goes back to, I mean, pro wrestling, I think I've seen people say pro wrestling wouldn't, you know, be around or exist to the level it is today if it wasn't for a guy like Hulk Hogan. So whether you're a pro wrestling guy or not, it had to hit you a little deep. That's an icon of a generation.
Yeah, I have to agree with that statement 100%, you know, at least for myself. And I mean, granted, I'm on the outskirts. I'm sure there are some people that never walked away from the pro wrestling. Maybe it stayed on their minds first and foremost. But yeah, I have to think Hulk Hogan is the reason that it still exists to how it is today, you know, what he's able to do. And it's funny, I just looked it up because, you know, your memory plays a funny thing. I was going to bring up the point of when Hulk Hogan lifted Andre the Giant over his head, but he didn't actually lift him. He body slammed him.
Right.
But I remember at the time, it was just like, it was this huge thing. And I remember as a kid, I was like, that was like the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life, you know? Yep. And like, I'll never, you know, like little things like that, you know, which is just so crazy, you know, when you think about some. I probably hadn't thought about that in 20,
but you can still remember. It's an iconic moment, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy. So it's nuts. You know, if you look at the impact in the combat sports world, I guess, you know, he was part of this Real American Freestyle wrestling promotion that their first event, I believe, is next month in Ohio, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Some people in our circle, because obviously we're very much into wrestling around here, is you know, collegiate wrestling, freestyle wrestling, as a culture, especially up here in the Northeast, and everybody was kind of like, what does that mean? I got to be honest, I don't think it. I mean, it was certainly impact in terms of he was the most visible face of Real American Freestyle. That's absolutely true. But I don't think he was necessarily the driving businessman behind it or the driving capital behind it. Yep. Like, I'm sure there were other, you know, business investors. So it was – and obviously, it's man, you're talking about human loss to worry about a business future, whatever. It maybe seems a little insensitive. But, again, I do think it is the natural place the mind goes. I do think it hurts them as a business to not have that icon, that guy that can get any – that's the whole thing, right? He can open any door, right? He could get any media outlet. Who's not going to talk to Hulk Hogan? But as far as, like, their operations or their funding, I don't think it'll impact that.
Yeah, no, I think if anything else, I mean, just like you said, he opened up doors, and it'd be really cool for people to go to events and have the potential to have a signing with him or see him on location. You know, I think if anything else, that was what they were probably hoping to reward the fans with, you know, something along those lines. But still, you know, I'm sure we'll see as days goes on, you know, the places where he had his hands, and I'm sure that business will be fine. But it'd be interesting to see. I mean, man, this week's been rough, man. We've been losing some people, so it's interesting to see the tributes and the things coming out. You know, it was neat hearing, you know, Ozzy. But Ozzy, I think everything I've seen with Ozzy Osbourne has been universally beloved.
Yeah.
You know, with Hulk Hogan, maybe not so much. You know, you're starting to see the memes and come out. You know, but to his friends, families, you know, and those that loved him, you know, condolences for losing, you know, a huge, huge individual that I will always certainly remember. And I choose to remember the parts that I like. And like I said, him slamming Andre the Giant is that's how I'm going to leave that in my head. I'm willing to forget a lot of the other shit because it didn't directly involve me. But yeah, man. So yeah, thoughts and condolences to those affected
thoughts
by his loss, and same with Malcolm Jamal Warner. You know, Theo, props,
and Chuck Mangione.
Chuck Mangione,
the legend. I had to have
how many you just looked up? Feel So Good. Make sure you find the instrumental version. You might have heard it in the elevator somewhere. We used to, when I was a kid, I couldn't control myself from just getting up and dancing. And I do credit him with making me want to learn how to play music. I loved dancing. We used to have a station wagon that had the very, very back section. It had like a seat, so you could pile the kids in the back, and they would sit. You could sit backwards and look at the car behind you or whatever, and the parents could have some peace and quiet. I guess, get up and I would dance in the back there, and I would just wherever his music came on, I would just get up and dance. And I put a tweet about it. I think his music, that whatever it was, I think it just resonated. My soul must resonate on that frequency. So
that's
I know
cool.
Most people won't ever know who Chuck Mangione is, but just like, you know, some people, you know, you watch something and it like the professional wrestling and it leaves an impact. This gentleman played music and left a big, huge impact, which definitely to this day, you know, still sort of affect me. But
and you know what, man? I'm messing with you because you're right. I don't know who Chuck Mangione is, but like, how cool of that is to, you know, not that Chuck Mangione set out to influence a young boy in Ohio or what have you. You know what I mean? But to know that like your art and what you love had an impact on somebody's life to a point that it like guided them in a direction of things they want to do. Like
100%.
That's an honor, man. That's a cool thing. So even though I'm busting your balls a little bit on it, I'm kind of glad you're laying it out there, man. Cause what a cool way to honor somebody.
Yeah. 100%. You know, which is kind of like Ozzy, you know, just a little bit different music style.
A little bit slightly different, man. Slightly different. I tell you what though, man. It was funny. Like, I mean, obviously we've known his music for generations and boy, how about the people that came to love or maybe even know Ozzy Osbourne because of reality television, you know what I mean?
Oh like, my goodness. Amazing. I didn't even think about that.
Early reality television stars, but it was funny. So, like I said, we were in the venue setting up for this weekend and you know, that nice professional AV, because it's a concert venue that we're in, you know what I mean? And they've got the speakers, like, all the way up. Dude, that music rocks, bro. Like, they hard, man.
And that's the great thing about music, man. Music like that, man, it'll exist much longer than any of us will, you know, hopefully. You know, hopefully that rock and roll doesn't ever die, you know, like that sort of stuff. But, yeah, it's interesting. But you're right. You brought up the reality thing, and I some of the commercials now have been making their way around where, you know, that they did when the Osbourne show was still on, and a commercial the other day where it was some soda drink, some twist drink. I don't even think it exists. It probably died out 20 years ago. It starts off with Ozzy struggling to put a trash can in like the bin, or maybe it was a trash compactor. His kids come in there and they're laughing, they're drinking something, and he's like, "What's that?" And they're like, it's not a Pepsi, it's a so-and-so twist. And he's like, "Huh?" And he's like, and they're, in fact, then they're like, "We're not even the Osbournes." And they act like they zipper down their skin.
I remember that.
It was the Donnie and Marie Osmond. They're like, "We're not the Osbournes, we're the Osmonds."
Oh,
and then then it shows Ozzy and Ben. He wakes up, he's like, "Ah, Sharon." And then it's it's the woman who's from the Brady Bunch is his wife or something.
Yes.
Then he just looks at the thing.
Oh.
Dude, Ozzy was
that might have been
so
like a Super Bowl commercial.
Fun.
I think that might have been like a Super Bowl commercial.
It makes sense that it would be because I remember at the time, like, it was just like the greatest commercial I'd ever seen. I was like, so well done. But yeah, I mean, like, it's funny. I didn't even think about it, you know, the people that maybe were introduced to Ozzy from reality TV.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about the younger kids that maybe did. That was their first thing of like, because they would be more in line with like the Kelly or what was it, Jack? Jack Osbourne or whatever, more that age, and they were probably like gravitating to that and like, their dad's so funny. He's so quirky. And it's like, bro, you have no idea.
Yeah, you have no clue. It's funny you say you don't talk a different kind of, but you have like, you know how you have like these little snapshot memories, like you're saying with Hulk, you remember Hulk slamming Andre the Giant, you know what I mean? For some reason, I don't know why, but I remember from the reality show, like, he had like an obsession with Chipotle burritos. Like, it was like the most amazing thing. I don't know why that stuck. He was just going on and on about how they craft them and how it's basically like two meals because you eat some and there's so much left over. You can put it in the fridge.
Was it a sponsored thing?
No.
I think he really liked them.
He was just enamored with Chipotle burritos. That was like when it was first starting to sweep across the nation or whatever. And it was like the greatest thing of all time. So
I mean, I do like a good burrito bowl, much more so than
so funny, man. Crazy stuff. All right, listen. Busy weekend here in Atlantic City. Like I said, I've got out here earlier in the week. I flew in the red eye late Tuesday night. Got here yesterday. Got a lot going on. So Friday night, it's CFFC BJJ 14. So we used to be Fury Professional Grappling, but it was the only branding that we have that's Fury Professional Grappling. It's like, well, how do you associate that with CFFC when we have CFFC Muay Thai, CFFC Match Day, CFFC Next Gen, CFFC? So we're like, all right, let's rebrand this. Ironically enough, as we were making the determination to rebrand it, the Fight Pass Invitational actually rebranded to UFC BJJ, but we were like, well, kind of goes lockstep. I mean, they're changing things, we're changing things, cool. So that'll be the first one, CFFC BJJ 14. Michael Chiesa is actually en route here right now. He's going to be working with me on the microphone. We have not worked together on the microphone in 10 years, I look back and saw how long ago it was. The first
time. I cannot
time,
believe that.
Isn't that crazy?
I cannot believe that.
The
it
first
does not
time
feel like 10 years.
He ever called fights was he and I worked together in Italy for Venator. Which was a loaded card over there. I mean, it was absolutely stacked. Remember, we always joke about the fact that like, Marvin Vettori was on like the regional card. Like, he wasn't on the national card. He was on like the local. I mean, there was a lot of big names on it and worked together. So we haven't worked together in 10 years. So I'm excited to work with him because obviously I know how passionate he is about grappling in addition to just being a good dude. So Michael Chiesa is on his way. Morgan Wirth is actually going to be with us as well. She's actually an on-air talent for the UFC. She's done Fight Pass Invitational. She's done some power slap stuff. She's done a lot of like social stuff for like live things on Facebook and YouTube. But she also does a ton of stuff behind the scenes as well. She's a producer of a lot of stuff like Dana White's Contender Series and different segments. So excited to have her here as well. So that's Friday night. Main card on UFC Fight Pass. The prelims will be live on OnlyFans. A little bit of change to the main card. We did have Pat Downey in the main event. He's actually has been in L.A. or SoCal, I guess, OC, training with Khamzat Chimaev as part of his UFC 319 camp. And unfortunately, I guess he suffered a little nick in training and was forced to withdraw. So Luke Fernandez will now be facing Phil Hawes instead, who steps in on short notice. I actually just finished having a lunch with Phil Hawes right before we sat down. So he's in town. Nice. He's excited to step in on short notice. That's Friday night. And then Saturday night, CFSC Next Gen 1. It's our first ever all Next Gen, all amateur lineup. It's going to stream live on OnlyFans. We'll archive it on YouTube as well. Ryan Cafaro is going to be working with me on that. So I'm looking very excited to work with Ryan Cafaro as well. And I've never had a chance to work with him on the microphone, but I've had a chance to call him on the microphone. So I'm definitely looking forward to working with that. I know he's excited. I think he'd been wanting to get the call for a little bit. So looking forward to work with him as well. So a lot going on. But that's all coming up. I would ask you, you and I broke down UFC 318. We recapped everything that happened out there in New Orleans. I was a little bummed that I didn't get to be there in person, but it was a great card. We talked about it all on the and a half episode. But we didn't talk about your experience at boxing. I want to get some insight on that because 46-year-old Manny Pacquiao, he boxed to a majority draw with Mario Barrios. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't get a chance to see it. I was traveling back, and then obviously I was watching UFC 318, and I was mainly focused on that. But I feel like most of the discussion I've seen is that people thought he was robbed and that Pacquiao should have won. So I don't know. Talk to me about just your experience. I know boxing is a little bit more chaotic normally than mixed martial arts and just what the whole experience was covering a Manny Pacquiao fight. Because, listen, talk about icons, talk about stars. Dude, Manny Pacquiao is one of the biggest stars of the generation, and not just, and obviously globally, you know what I mean? So it had to be pretty cool, even at this stage in his career, to be covering Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, it was great. It was incredible. And I mean, you're talking about a guy that was so well-spoken on the microphone, you know, in the lead-up to the fight and then after the fight. Just incredible just to see this cat. And it's funny, when you're watching the videos of when he first started fighting, he just looked like a young kid, you know, and then to see him still doing it at his age now, which like 46 or whatever.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, his first fight in America was on my birthday, like in 2001, I think.
That's crazy.
I was like, that's pretty cool. I almost need to go back and watch it because, you know, at the time when I watched it, the momentum was certainly in Manny's favor. You know, it seemed like he was hitting more. If you go back and look at the CompuStat numbers, or is that what it, CompuStat? Is that the right term?
CompuBox.
CompuBox, that's it. It had a slight lead to Barrios, but when you're watching it that night, you know, towards the end, I think part of it too, because I think it was just that amazement had set in where I was just like, I can't believe he's still in there. And he looked great. His calves were huge. I was like, man, that's a Filipino thing or something, because I got big calves too. But I was just like, dude, I was just like, this is crazy. He just had so much energy going all the way through. And Barrios, by the end, looked flat and looked like he was the guy that was like out of steam. But as I was watching, I know the commentary team was leaning really, really hard into Pacquiao. And if somebody was watching on TV, it's very easy to have the commentary sort of like sway you into
Absolutely.
Whether it's whatever. But I'm not sure that Manny won the first two rounds like a lot. The in t- on-air commentary, I think, was giving them, and they flashed up their unofficial scorecards, and it gave the first two rounds. And I'm not quite sure that's the case, but the bulk of the big ones towards the end, I would pretty much probably lean towards Manny. I know Manny said that he thought he took 8-4. I'm not sure 8 is the right, but it was pretty darn close. And when we got the majority draw, you know, most people that were a Pacquiao fan considered that like a win, but they did feel like, man, he looked so good that he should have got the win. That would have been the nice, you know, bow on an incredible night, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, as I was watching the fight, I was cutting clips from the UFC, so maybe I wasn't giving the full focus, and I wasn't listening to the audio from the event too closely, so it didn't really sort of sway me, and maybe they would say some little bits that would maybe give me a piece of info to say whether, you know, I thought somebody should have took a round or something. But I didn't feel like at the end of the night that it was like a robbery by any means. I knew it was close. And if anything else, the majority draw, I mean, it's he didn't actually lose. He just didn't get the belt, you know, like,
right.
You know, so it wasn't the win. He didn't really lose. But I also feel like if you would have gave him the nod, I wouldn't have been like, okay, no, that they're just giving him charity, like he didn't win it, you know. It was pretty darn close, but I do feel like I would like to go back and watch it to get a certain feel. But I know just at the end of the night, I was just like, I can't believe I'm watching it. I thought Barrios was going to go out there and make him look like an old man and smoke him, and it did not happen.
Yep,
and I was just like, holy cow, Manny, you are amazing, you know. But for him to be like, oh, okay, politics is done, I'm back focused on boxing, I'm doing whatever, I'm like, bro, you're still your age, you know, like, like, calm down a little bit. But if that's how you look against a current champ that everybody had a lot of high hopes on and, you know, thought he was going to go in there, and I didn't get the feeling like he was like taking it easy on Manny by any means.
Right.
think he had a hard time actually landing those shots. So then I started wondering, I was like, okay, maybe he's not as good as I thought he was going into this, you know. But it was still amazing. Boxing media still sucks ass. But to be there was fun.
It's just the certain few,
and I won't name their names, that do what they do and always butt into shit. They show up late, and then they expect to be able to smash in there. And I'm just used to the politely run, nice and civil UFC mixed martial arts fights where everybody just does their thing.
But if you think about it, right, and again, I'm not trying to necessarily call out people, but if you just think about this in general, right, like, we were kind of talking about this a little bit the other day. In the days of MMA Junkie, you know, we didn't get the center shot. Now, nowadays, it's a little bit different, right, because things are labeled, and I think the PR team does a pretty good job of, like, labeling based on kind of seniority and size of outlet and that sort of thing. And so, obviously, MMA Junkie gets a lot of respect, and you're front and center every single time, right? But when you and I were out there covering events, the reason MMA Junkie started getting front and center every single time is because you and I would show up an hour and a half early to stand in line, to wait, to make sure that we were the first person to walk in the door, the first person to have our credential, and we would go front and center to make sure that we had a clean line of sight, that we had the best shot of anybody in the entire media of being the most direct shot. But it's not like we would ever show up late and expect for our spot to still be there, or expect, like, hey, man, didn't you save this spot for me or whatever? And granted, there's a lot of cool people in the media, and we made a lot of friends over the years, and they might have even been like, hey, bro, do you want your normal spot? Like, it sounds like maybe you got stuck in traffic or whatever. But we weren't like that. We show up an hour and a half early, and we get the spot. So, again, like you said, not to call anybody out, not to talk trash, but it is a little bit annoying when you're like, hey, man, the reason I'm here right now, even if you don't know my face, even if you don't know who I am, the reason I'm here is because I dedicated, you know, 2 hours of my day today to be here early so that I could be in this exact position, and now you're going to roll in and expect me to move out of your way. Like, come on, man. Come on. That's not cool.
Yeah, no. And it's just like, even with like, and it wasn't that they didn't ask me to move, but it was like I had a little space so I could actually stand and operate my camera, and then they'll literally try to cream it. Since I created a little buffer, the next guy over that got there in time created a buffer, but then, yes, could somebody put another camera in that space in between? Sure. Would you be a dick by doing it? Sure. But what do they choose? They choose right to be there. A dick and put that little fucking phone camera right in there. So now we can't stand and operate our cameras easily. We have to, you know, watch where we're it's just annoying. It's just annoying. It's like, bro, can you just get here early and get a fucking spot like a real person instead of like expect to bully away? And then do you know how many viewers I have? You know how many people? I'm like, bro, ask me how much I care about what your fucking viewership is. It's non-existent, bro.
Oh, I love it when he's a little salty. I love it when Cole Comey's a little bit salty. You know what I mean? That's,
yeah,
because
I'm a nice, smiley dude. I don't want to have to like be like, bro, why are we arguing because you're fucking lazy and you can't get to a place and then you expect to be treated like whatever. And like, I know the other boxing people maybe think that you're cool. I don't. I think you're lazy for not getting here on time and getting your spot.
I respect
but whatever. But still, that didn't detract. It was still really effing cool to be there at a Pacquiao. And I was glad. You know, I was glad I was able to be able to do what I normally would have to do here on the couch. I was still able to do my UFC duties, you know, and cut socials and all the other stuff. But got to sort of bolster it and add and provide coverage to the network, which is cool because we had writers and boxing writers and stuff that were really grateful that we had somebody on the ground to shoot the stuff, and that's what I've been saying forever. You know, if I'm here, let's do it. You know, let's shoot this other stuff.
You should be, man. I love it. You're providing that. And I was just, boy, I didn't even think about that, but how cool is that? Like, there's probably been writers for USA Today that have like, man, I wish we had some video to go along with this. I wish I had a little video I could embed in my story. I wish I could get this clip where I caught this one thing in a press conference that nobody else has been focusing on, but we don't have that press conference. And now you'd be like, yeah, we do. You get whatever you need here. I got you. Like, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Good for you, man. All right, well, listen, and then you ended up going to the NSAC meeting, right? Or did you
not make
it?
I did.
So let me. All right. So let me. Hold on. Let me build into this real quick because I did not. You normally, if I don't, and I haven't gone to an NSAC meeting in a long time, but I usually call in anyway because you have a phone option. And I'll listen in to everything that's unfolding. But I was traveling to Atlantic City. Like I said, took the red eye, and then from Philadelphia, met up with my boss Rob Hadak, and then we drove to Atlantic City. I'm giving a shout out to Cafe 2825 again. That place. I can't believe I came to this place, this restaurant. If you ever get a chance to come to Atlantic City, and it's not easy to get a reservation there. Like, you have to know somebody to get a reservation, but luckily our team knows somebody, and we've gotten in. It is phenomenal. So I wanted to give them a shout-out real quick. They don't even need me to give them a shout-out. I did say that I did see we were there last night. They're expanding their dining room, so they're adding a little bit more onto the restaurant. I still don't know if that means you're going to be able to get a reservation. They don't need me giving them a shout-out. They're booked up all the time. But it's phenomenal food, so I just want to tell them I love it. But I saw the headlines. Because I didn't get to go to the NSAC meeting, and I know the big thing on the big ticket item this time was Sean Strickland, of course, right? And so even when I'm traveling, I'll try to keep a little bit of social media, look at headlines. But the headlines that I saw were all like, Sean Strickland is suspended indefinitely due to this incident that happened at Tough Enough. Of course, you and I were both there. We saw it unfold live. We've talked about it a little bit, about our thoughts on it. But I saw all these headlines, NSAC suspend Sean Strickland indefinitely, and I haven't had a chance to go back and look at the tape because I've been super busy here. Like, there's so much to do behind the scenes of running an MMA promotion, which I absolutely love. I love every aspect of it. But I haven't had a chance to look at it. But correct me if I'm wrong, Cole Coffey, and maybe you can walk me through this. Isn't what they do anytime they don't have a chance to finish a hearing, basically, or to have a full thing, is they suspend you indefinitely? But it basically just means we'll see you in 30 days, and we'll get this thing resolved.
Yeah, and I think the use of the word indefinitely, if somebody did that, I think that's a misuse of the word because it's
seemed like clickbait to me. It's not like a lot of clickbait out there.
Like, they literally did. If you look at even I guess one of the best way to do it is, you know, if you look at even the agenda, it just asks for a continuation of the temporary suspension.
Yes,
indefinitely is forever. And they never said forever suspension. And I actually, because me being me and just wanted to double check and whatever, after the meeting had finished, I called over Jeff Mullen, the executive director. I said, can you clarify this for me? When you say Sean is suspended, is there a time frame initially, is he under a certain time frame or is there anything? And he's like, no, he's just suspended until we're able to have a hearing on it, till we're able to talk about it. So obviously the matter that he, when Sean did what he did, so the commission says, you are suspended for your actions. We're going to need to talk about this. You are temporarily suspended. The time this meeting comes up, they send stuff to Sean if he wants to respond. They send stuff to, you know, at all the letters and stuff, and then he has a chance to do a response.
Right.
The lawyer, they when they toss the matter over to the lawyer, they said, all right, tell me about this. And the lawyer says, okay, on this day, blah, 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 this happened, this happened. I, with the conversation with Jeff Mullen, reached out to the fighter, sent him these things to talk about this stuff. I have not yet heard back from the fighter, so I move that we continue, we move this matter into the next whatever date so we can actually then at that point rule on what is happening. So they're giving time for the fighter to actually do what happens. So in this time, if the fighter reaches out to the lawyer, they can adjudicate, they can make an agreement, they could talk about whatever, so that in the next meeting the lawyer can say, we've, you know, have a proposed adjudication, you know, this is what's going to happen, the fighters agreed upon it, we've agreed that instead of this many months or this much time and this whatever and this sort of fee, that this will be good on it. And if you guys are good with it, I will turn this to the, you know, I will hand this over to you guys for discussion or for possible vote. And then the commission will say, guys, do you have any questions? Do you have whatever? No, no. Okay. You know, well, can I have a motion to agree to the terms of whatever they just talked about, you know? And then if people are cool about it, yes, yes, it's good.
Yep.
And then that's done. There's just no set time. And that's what I wanted to clarify, because I think a lot of times we think when you hear suspended that there's always a set amount of time to it. But in these temporary suspensions and things of this type, they are just suspended. If the hearing never happens, if they never ever have a hearing again, it's indefinite. But it's not the case.
But it's not the case. They just meet until every single month.
Yeah, until they can get it on the books, and then they have given enough time for the somebody to respond. Sean's on social media. Sean's doing things. Sean, if he wanted to respond, could have had a response. And it's quite possible that we could have had something on this particular hearing, but there wasn't, so they're giving them another 30 days to respond, and if they don't, the lawyer will make a motion, and the commission can vote on it right then. So I imagine,
he'll want to respond, because I will tell you that right now, like, they, regardless of what the response is, and I'm hoping Sean has somebody advising him that that's the case to do, is, like, they consider you just ignoring it as kind of like, that's when they'll punish you up to the
guilty
max.
As charged. Yeah, and we're going to give you whatever. There was another gentleman that, I forget his name. Another guy that was on the docket. He didn't respond to anything. And the potential punishment would have been either 9 months to 24 months was the range. The guy did not reach out, did not say anything. The lawyer suggested 18 months.
Yep.
There's a lot of potential less months that it could have been if they could have worked something out. So
100%.
Could the lawyer have just, opted for 24 months? It better have been pretty darn severe if you're going to give 24 months. So the guy tried to be at least a little lenient, and I want to say it was the first time.
Right.
But he still got 18 months.
But I think they kind of look at that almost as,
it could have been a lot less if he reached out.
That's it. I think they kind of look at it as maybe disrespect, or maybe just like you're ignoring their authority or whatever. And again, not like a power trip. It's just like, wait a minute, man. We oversee you, and you didn't even bother to respond. Like, we're going to lean more onto the heavy side of it. So hopefully Sean does respond. I did take a look at it, by the way, just if you want to mark your calendars. As of right now, Thursday, August 21st. Is the next commission meeting, so that's when we should potentially get some.
Now, I will
resolution.
Tell you, you know, speaking of people that go and what they, you know, take as a sign of respect or whatever, we joked, I think we joked on the and a half, I think we actually said it, whereas, you know, TKO was getting, it was a plan
well,
for the promoters.
I lied that was, when I said that the big ticket item was Sean Strickland, I kind of realized I made a mistake there. Clearly, the biggest thing on the ticket was new business section F, line one, request by TKO Boxing Promotions LLC for a professional promoter license. And then that leans in towards number two, which says, yes. Should TKO Boxing Promotions be granted a license? If that happens, then, oh, by the way, we would also like a program permit to promote a professional boxing event. We're looking at September 13th for our debut event at Allegiant Stadium. Now, of course, it says here, pending approval of new business number one.
Approval.
Yeah, so I'm sorry I buried the lead there. I do want to apologize about that. The Sean Strickland story was important. But let me hear about the lengthy debate that was in place. Let me hear the impassioned plea that was made
by the representative
of TK.
I was like, do I have enough battery life on my camera? Will I be able to record all of this? It was pretty much, this was definitely a deal that was brokered behind the scenes. You know, in fact, when they were like, this seems good. We've talked about it. We're excited about it. Blah, blah, blah. We have a vote. Yeah. And then when it got to number two, they're like, should there be any discussion? It was crickets. And the guys were, based upon what we heard in one, I think we could just make a motion and say we're good with like Allegiant Stadium. And they did.
Great.
But the thing is, we know that the deal was going to happen. I mean, we knew the thing was going to happen. But TKO showed up. They had
really?
Four individuals in the room. Mark Ratner and three other dudes. One other guy that's another guy. I can't remember him. I see him all around. I can't for the life of me remember what his name is. I don't think he's PR. I think he's whatever. And then two other individuals that were there for TKO. TKO had four execs there, or at least four representatives in the room. It was a done deal.
Yeah,
they didn't say anything, but when it got to the end of the commission, when it got to the public comments, Mark Ratner stood up and said, we're very excited. I want to thank you on behalf of TKO for, giving us this, permit. We're really excited to move forward. And then another gentleman that I didn't catch what his name was stood up and just said, I'm mirroring Mark Ratner's sentiments, we're really grateful, to be able to do this, blah, blah, blah.
That's the way you handle
the
business.
The commission, that's how you do it. The commission at the end was like, we thank you very much for being here, and we're looking forward to what we're able to do with you in the future, blah, blah, blah. I'm paraphrasing, but ultimately that's it. But yes, did they need to be there?
No.
Hell no.
Nope.
It would have happened anyways. They could have called in on the phone.
Yep.
But the two of the other individuals that I had never seen before, I do not believe are Vegas residents.
Okay.
I know that Ratner wanted to probably show them a commission and see how a hearing is and maybe, rub elbows and get to meet people that you're going to be dealing with. So these people flew into Vegas.
Right.
For this. On a meeting they didn't need to. That they could have stayed. They could have been at the UFC headquarters on the phone, all in a boardroom talking about this. But they chose to go, and the commission will remember that.
Yep.
If you are a fighter, even if you can't go, you could get on the phone, and they will think of it more lenient than if you completely ignore it. If you go, it's a whole nother level, even above that. And I tell you, it might be awkward. It might feel whatever because you're standing in front of people, but I would think that if you think you're walking into a big, huge courtroom and there's a bunch of strangers that are watching this, unless you've done something crazy, heinous, no one's there.
Yep.
I was the besides myself and the TKO individuals, the only other person not up on the screen that you would see was the guy that I think he does IT for them. He was off the court and making sure that if something went wrong with Zoom or Teams meeting that gets broadcast out. Since it is a public meeting, it has to be able to be broadcast at the same time, for public information and just openness. I was the only other person from the public there. So if you're a fighter thinking like, I don't want to go into this courtroom and be embarrassed in front of other people, more than likely you're going to be the only person there.
Very true.
So don't let that be the reason that you possibly could earn a few months off of your time. And just show your face. Say something. They will. I mean, we can never guarantee leniency. But from what we've seen after all these years of going to these things, they most certainly take that into account when it comes 100%. To sentencing and leniency.
100%. It's like it's just you acknowledging, you know, the situation and that they have the authority to govern this and that sort of thing. It's just respectful. It's the reason that the Zuffa Boxing, the TKO Boxing people, I should say, were in the meeting. It's just to show respect to those people that are handling business. That is absolutely how you handle business. So that's cool to hear, man. That's good insight. And it's interesting because, as you said, not to make it seem like what the commission does in terms of approving promoters isn't thorough, because it is. Like, I've seen, like, we've been in there many times when it's a new person coming in. It's like FBI background checks. You know, obviously you got to show proof of funds in the bank. I mean, they do extensive research. It's hundreds of pages of documents that have to be filled out. So it's not like we're just saying, oh, yeah, they'll just let anybody come in here and approve some shows. No, they make you go through some very stringent background checks and, like I said, financial proofs as well. But with TKO, you've been doing business with them for how many years? You know what I mean? It's not like you're worried, like, but if we approve them, is there a danger they won't pay their fighters? Or is there a danger that they won't hold the that they won't get the safety done right here? And like, nah, come on, man. You know, so anytime they're going to ask for something, it's basically like rubber stamp, dude. You've been doing business here for, you know, how many years? 25+ years, and so we're good to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
And being the investigative journalist that I am, I did grab Mr. Ratner before he left the room asked him a couple questions, you know, just to say, hey, you know, just obviously, you know, get your thoughts on this momentous experience, you know, what it's going to be, you know, you're setting the bar kind of high for yourself. You're starting off at Allegiant Stadium. Like, where do you go from there? he did say they're hoping to put on between like 12 to 13 events a year.
Wow.
With them being all over. Vegas is definitely going to be one of the ones. But I asked him, you know, since you're talking about fighters, you guys already have an idea of like who you're starting to look at, you know, because Canelo Crawford, you're starting pretty high. But, you know, again, and I kind of forget what they were talking, you know, and I know they've talked about this in the past, you know, so think of like Apex shows and some other shows, but looking at talent that people haven't really found yet. So they're not going to go out there and try to, you know, take, you know, all the biggest players. They're trying to foster fighters. They're trying to build up the next big people, you know, kind of like the Callum Walsh, even though I think Walsh was probably already on the radar, and that's how Dana found him in the first place or whatever. But no, it'd be interesting. But yeah, but I kept it short because I could tell you had a group of people waiting to go, so it was like a 2 minutes. But it was just like, hey we're here, and we could slap that onto the story, you know.
Mixed martial arts journalist of the year, nominee.
But yeah, talking about boxing
on my panel, that should be cold coffee. That's funny. Yeah, you know, it probably is important though to differentiate that, right? Like, and I think Dana White has gone out of his way to say this a couple times, but just in case you haven't been watching these press conferences, is that while he is, you know, promoting this, and while they are the promoter of record, this is not actually part of the TKO Boxing plan. This is just this special one-off event, and you know, Dana and the company being so entrenched in Las Vegas, and this being such a major iconic event, but this is not their business plan. Because it is kind of interesting the way you were laying it out, like, hey man, event number one, Canelo Crawford Allegiant Stadium, how are we going to make this a little bigger and better next time, right? Like, well, I don't know. We're going to the moon, and we are resurrecting and Muhammad Ali, and I mean, like, I don't know.
He did say he thinks it's going to be one of the biggest. I can't remember if he said of all time, or if I'd have to go back and listen to the quote, all time, or definitely biggest boxing event of the year. He thinks the amount of interest he actually was like, he's like, it's gonna be like Floyd and Connor, like the interest is gonna be all over the place.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
And it is gonna be huge, you know. So I don't know if I feel bad because I don't know if it'd be the biggest of all time, but of the year, easily.
It's big.
You know, it's big.
Floyd and Connor was big, and obviously in a different way. Are you? I actually, because I'm not going to make the trip to San Antonio for Noche UFC, and we don't have a
CFSC. I'll be at Canelo Crawford.
Event. You'll be at Canelo Crawford. I actually I applied as well, man. I think I'm going to be at Canelo Crawford as well. So maybe we can.
I'll be there.
Maybe we'll be talking about some boxing that week from Las Vegas, because that's my plan to be there as well.
Dude, I will tell you something. There was another MMA individual, but I won't tell his website because he doesn't need it, was there, and they were doing their live watch-along of the Manny Pacquiao as opposed to the UFC event. And, brother, every Filipino that had internet access apparently was logged into his site. He had at one point like 70,000 concurrent viewers watching a dude talk about a fight that they couldn't even see on the screen.
What?
And I was like, that's the way to go. That's the way to go.
That's wild.
Wild. It had like 3 million views on
Holy
YouTube right
cow.
Now. Yeah. So doing a watch along. So, I mean, this is an MMA site talking about boxing. So, I mean, these big boxing fights, man, I'm telling you, man, Noche is not going to do anywhere near the numbers of what this Crawford Canelo. So I'm almost tempted to tell our because we do George and Goes do watch alongs from a lot of these fights. I might just suggest that they do boxing this time around. Like, brother, you want to get some people, maybe talk a little boxing. I think those guys are boxing fans.
Those guys are boxing fans. They grew up watching boxing.
I think that's the play. I mean, no offense to the Noche, but Noche is not the Noche that we all thought we were going to get.
Right. Well, it's a fight night this time anyway, right? It's not a pay-per-view.
Yeah, but
this
I think
they're
still it's UFC fight night, but they're still UFC Noche, right?
They are. But I'm saying is in terms of like if you were making a decision to watch along, right? Like, they don't normally do watch along for fight nights anyway, right? So it's not like you'd be like, yeah, but we'd be skipping a UFC pay-per-view to do
that's true.
This boxing event. So yeah, you probably should. You probably should recommend that. Look at that. Yeah. Look at home run over there. I mean, just handling business over there. I mean, Cole Coffey, just journalist of the year type stuff. Now he's making business decisions for the site and trying to guide
the right direction. Those go a long way. You know, they take those they take into account what I say a lot.
When you take over the site, man, you let me know. I might have to fill out an application. You know what? I would come back and work for you. I would absolutely come back and work for you, man. I'd be more than happy.
All right, let me get on that.
All right, listen, there is a UFC event this week. It is daytime MMA. It is, of course, in Abu Dhabi, the main card, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. And the prelims at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, main card at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Being that I am on East Coast time, I don't get the full benefit. Pacific time zone for these morning, like 9 a.m. start. Oh, my God.
I love it.
You just wake up, brew yourself a little cup of coffee, you know what I mean? And then you sit down and you start watching some fights and you get done in the afternoon. So I'm going to watch the morning of it, of course. Obviously, like I said, the prelims start at noon, so we'll be up and around. I will not get to watch the featured bouts live because we will already be on site getting ready for our event. So I'll have to watch that after the fact. But I love daytime MMA. It's funny because, obviously the Middle East is becoming such a power player in combat sports. And for the fans that want to attend live, I don't want to say like, hey, they should do more over there because I know people want to go to the fights. But honestly, if every UFC event in history was held in Abu Dhabi, I would not argue too much because I could get up every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. and start watching some fights, man. So
right?
I'm pumped up for it. I know that you, I guess you got to do a little remote editing for Farah Hanoun, or what's the plan for you?
Yeah, I think she's going to try to get some stuff. I'm still a little interested to see what we're actually going to get. But now I think about it, I might actually have this weekend off. I think I'm off, but I think she's going to try to get some stuff. She actually shot some stuff. Kudos to her. She's been over in Abu Dhabi like early this week, so she's been gathering information, different interviews. She did buy a little microphone for her phone, and she's been capturing a lot of stuff on her phone. But I don't think she's going to – I'm not sure if she's going to do anything on fight night.
She has other responsibilities, right, because she's not working just
for she'll
MMA
be writing
junkie.
And doing other little things. She'll be doing, recaps of stuff and things of that sort. But, some of these remote ones, I mean – one, I am super, super excited for the 9 a.m. I mean, like, I am over the moon. I love it. Now I'm just going to be chilling, watching on the couch. It's funny. People are always like, I guess we are diehard. You know, it's a day off. It's a Saturday. I could literally count on one or two hands the amount of Saturdays I don't have to do fighting.
You're still
and
gonna
here
watch
I
fighting.
Am still
gonna watch
fighting.
100%, bro. What do you do when you don't have to work fights? I watch fights. You know what I mean? Like
fights.
I love it.
But I'm not. And it's funny because I laugh. But you guys are another level. Like when you guys, because I know you particularly, ingest all the countdowns, all the embeds, all that other stuff, and a lot of times. I just don't watch those, but if it's a fight, I'll watch the fight. But during the rest of the time, I don't watch all that other stuff. It's tough. It's tough to justify, but here I am. It's Saturday. I could go do something else. And I'm like, morning fights.
Let's
let me
go.
Just stay on the couch and watch them.
should be a fun card. All right, let me ask you, main
it
event.
Should be a
who'd
fun
you
card.
Go? Robert Whittaker, Rainer DeRitter, who'd you lean?
I went to DeRitter.
Did you really?
I know. I'm on the fence.
I'm on the fence too, but I leaned Whittaker. I think this is, I literally was Ritter.
I'm sorry, Robert, nonstop. But man, that last one of DeRitter, I was like, okay, I'm gonna give him a shot. So it's sort of a calculated play.
He's very good.
Yeah. If it stays as a striking, I think he's going to do okay. I think if it gets to the ground, I think when we saw what he was able to do, I give him the lead when he gets on the ground. So again, I'm trying to catch numbers. I'm two behind.
I think a lot of other people went Whittaker.
Yeah, it's one of those calculated risks. It could either make me further down, but I mean, there's been so many fights that Whittaker is just proven himself time and time again, and this clearly could be one where he's like, kid, you did good, you've been good in other ones, but you're just not here yet, you know. So
it's a big one.
Could be a change in the I don't want to say change in the guard, because it's not like Whittaker's going anywhere, but I think DeRitter's definitely earned this shot, and if he can do something with it, then I would say that, you know, he's probably one more away from a title shot.
No doubt. I was kind of interested to see Marcus Muschietta's opening up the car. They got him at the very first fight of the night. But it makes sense. I mean, he's kind of an inexperienced heavyweight. And, I mean, inexperienced in terms of MMA, obviously. In terms of jiu-jitsu, he's got 25-plus years of top level. But I'll definitely
that could be a fun start, though. You know, because bringing the big boys, you know, early on, I think hopefully it'll be a good start to the night. Because, yeah, Boudet brings it as well. So, I mean, it'll be Boudai. Yeah, it should be good. It should be
I'm looking forward to the card. I'll be enjoying it. Hey, listen, one more thing about the Middle East I did want to say. I did notice it might have flown under the radar a little bit, but PFL announced that they sold a little bit of ownership to Dubai. I'm assuming, and I was reading the press release, and again, I was doing other things at the time, it didn't necessarily lay out the structure of, does that mean they're only investing in the MENA League, or does it mean that they're investing in the company as a whole, or, you know, are the things carved out like that? I'm not exactly sure what their ownership structure and operational structure is.
I think that's what we'd have to have clarification to see if MENA's even a separate organization, or if it's just a division within the one organization. I imagine it's one organization. And maybe by doing this, they could start piecing off some things a little bit. Or
it would
make
sense, right? If you're like, hey, I'm selling you ownership in this particular league, not in our entire organization. It would be pretty interesting to see if that's why they do it. But I just wanted to point out because, A, it's an influx of capital, which is good. And I know that the PFL kind of – I feel like people tend to just kick them around a little bit and pick on them a little bit. I think – again, I've said it from the beginning. I'll keep saying it, man. I think they're doing really good things across the globe to ensure financial stability and to ensure, you know, that they're operationally profitable, which is ultimately what it boils down to. You know what I mean? And if they can serve these local audiences around the world with these local leagues and then build this infrastructure where you kind of take and develop those people and then you move them up to the next. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think there's some good things happening there. So, I feel like people kind of just try to, you know, and again, look – the distance between one and two. I'm not saying they're like, oh, USC better watch their back. They're hot on their heels. No, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is I think it seems to me like they're doing very good things to just at least ensure their viability and that they're around for years to come, which I think what everybody hopes to see.
Yeah, because, I mean, you think that, you know, yes, if you can keep it all internal and you never have to have external money put into it, and you know, business is great, that's wonderful, you know, things are good. But this could also be an instance, you know, where some countries and some areas, if you don't have some sort of ownership from somebody that's from within that country or some sort of something that that area resonates with, like if they just see you as an American company trying to come into the Middle East, they might be like, we don't want to do business. The TV organizations might not even want to give you broadcast deals.
Yep.
But if you could say that there is a partly owned company by an entity over in there, maybe doors open up. It might just not be about keeping them afloat, which is, I think, what a lot of people might initially think. Even myself might say, oh, okay, this is just to help keep them afloat. Man, they just found another bunch of money to kind of burn through. If this is properly opening up doors, you know, and it's a twofold, when they're comfortable with what they have to give up to get into that market, then that's the operating cost of, I guess, your business.
Yep.
You know, if you're choosing to operate in that region and that area, and that's kind of necessary, it's hard for us to keep the same mentality of like, well, you know, if it was here in the States, we wouldn't want to have investors. That only means this, this, this. You know, that's not taking into full account the scene over there and what it takes to operate and do business over there. You try to go into a lot of places in China where people are like, why is the government in part of ownership? You think it was by choice? You know, like some things just have to happen, you know, unfortunately, to if you want to do business there, you know, it might just be one of those things. So, again, you know, maybe it is only in reference to the MENA thing. Maybe it, you know, I guess maybe that stuff will kind of hash itself out and we'll get to find out more. But again, at the end of the day, like you said, they're continuing to find money to keep operating. And it seems like they're, you know, moving strong, and that's good for everything, you know. And if it isn't, I guess we'll see in the next couple of years, you know.
Yep, so. Indeed. I did want to get one last thing in before we go. I got to run. My phone's starting to blow up over here. I definitely got to go get back to work. There's a lot of stuff going on. Dana did make a lot of headlines this past week in New Orleans talking about John Jones, and he laid it out there. The quote was, I believe, I can't risk putting him in big positions in a big spot and have something go wrong, especially the White House card. Definitely saw that. Definitely watched it. Definitely raised my eyebrows a little bit. But I don't believe that means he won't fight at the White House. I'm just saying. I believe Dana is very, very savvy in the way he lays things out, and he doesn't drop things in a random press conference simply just because, like, oops, I let that slip out. My bad. Oh, gosh.
Yeah,
can't believe I said that. Very, very calculated in the things that he lets slip and the things that, and the little nuggets that he drops in the quotes along the way. And I do believe that was very much a stern message to John Jones, which John, I think, has come out and said, saw the press conference, message received. But I think people were quick to go, well, that means John Jones isn't fighting the White House. Dana just said that. You know what I mean? I disagree. I think it was more of like, hey, I'm going to need some indications in place. I'm going to need either, I need to see you fight between then and then. Like, that's a year away. I need to see you fight once to know that you'll actually fight. And once you fight once, then yes, I'll put you on the White House so we know that you will show up. Or, you know, maybe I need a little bit of a, maybe we need a little financial agreement here. You know what I mean? You're saying you're going to be here, but if you don't, you're in breach of this contract here, and this ain't the normal thing where you just go, oops, and we'll reschedule it. You know what I mean? So that was just me. You know, we don't have to go into a huge breakdown about it, but I just wanted to throw that out there because I saw a lot of people immediately going, well, I saw the quote from Dana. That means John Jones is not fighting at the White House. And I just stepped back and said, nah, come on, man. This still might happen.
And if anything else you want to take away from it, you can take the fact that it doesn't sound like the UFC's closed that chapter after going through all that, and then to have Jones kind of say no. I think a lot of people could be like, well, if I was the UFC, I'd be pissed off. I would never be open to try to get that guy in another fight again. You know, I take it as, wow, that door is not closed.
That's right.
That door's not closed. You know, again, I mean, the whole logistics of any potential card is still so far away. And even the potential of, you know, is it even going to be a full card? Can we potentially take over some portion of the White House space to put on an event and then let alone then hope to have fans there? It's such a monumental undertaking to begin with. I'm still more leaning on the side that it might not happen much more to – it won't happen it would be a very limited engagement. So the talk of who's going to actually fight on the card is almost the least worry. Yep. At this point, you know, there's a lot of other hurdles and a lot of other stuff that you want to have happen, to make this even happen. But the thing I took away is the fact that Jones is still a potential player, you know, that the UFC is not that pissed off by whatever sort of situation happened, all this delaying to eventually not happen, that they're still open to fighting or still working with John Jones.
See, you've been around the game. You see the little subtleties. You see the things that I see as well. It is interesting. We'll see. And a lot of time, obviously a year away. But it is interesting, as you were saying that, now the UFC is kind of set in their ways and the way they do things. But honestly, it kind of would make sense because he said it wants it to be a pay-per-view, and that does make sense. I'm just saying right now, I bet this thing ends up on Netflix, whether that means it's free on Netflix or you pay a pay-per-view on Netflix, I don't know, but I bet this thing ends up on Netflix. But if you assume that a five-fight main card is a typical pay-per-view, so you think I got to have five fights, and then I would bet that you'd want one or two more, A, as just kind of like a lead-in, just to remind people that you've got the pay-per-view, and also just as kind of a rehearsal, because as you said, the logistics and the operations are going to be totally different than anything you've ever done. I would think that, you know, maybe 7 fights total would be good. And I think that, like, the Secret Service would like that too. Like, we don't need 7. Like, the people that are going to be there are invited guests only. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
So, like, they don't want 7 hours of MMA action. You know what I mean? So, anyway, that's just
my
thought.
I think if I had a spitball, and if I'm going to say this is going to happen, I think it's a split location. I think, looking 1 mile down the street is the Capital One Arena. I think most of the fights happen at the Capital One Arena, and then the feed switches over to the White House location for whatever fights or multiple fights that happen. They're not going to put all those fans on the White House. It's not going to happen. But if you put the bulk of everything, at an arena there in whatever, and then they broadcast the fights into the arena, which happens all the time when you watch, like, New Year's Eve broadcasts, other stuff, shows can switch to multiple locations. I envision that if they are going to do something at the White House, it would be, just as you said, invite only.
Yep.
Small, limited space, because they're not going to have people going in and out. They're not going to have the media there. I mean, if they do, it'd be the press pool that's already vetted by them. But down the street, they would have the rest of the event. And then if anything else, after the fights, maybe they'll shuttle the fighters to the post at the venue, at the arena. But I don't see a full fight card happening on the White House lawns. But I could see if they did do something of a two-location
split location. That's
event.
Interesting, too. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you don't need 13 fights on the White House lawn and 7 hours of people.
And again, it's part of a celebration for the 250. It's not about the event if it's going to be taking place during other stuff that's happening during this thing, unless they're saying, okay, his whole point of bringing it up was, like, at the 250th celebration or whatever, they were going to go big. Maybe we'll have a UFC fight here on the thing. Other things are going to be going on at the same time.
Yep.
Unless they choose to just say, okay, well, as part of the celebration, all this other stuff is happening on Friday, but on Saturday is the limited UFC event, and maybe they do something along those lines. But how busy that the president, how busy the administration is, I don't know if they can divvy out too many days to do a celebration and a sporting event that, on the lawn or whatever. So that's why I think that, if they can carve out a little bit, maybe the two location. Well, the fight's going to happen on Saturday, but it's going to be at the arena.
You don't think, like, maybe they'll have open workouts inside the White House and then maybe, like, ceremonial
in the Oval Office,
for sure. Ceremonial weigh-ins at the Washington
Monument.
But,
at least makes it much more realistic in my mind that something could happen. It's the most guarded, outside of maybe, like, Fort Knox, building in America. You don't just change things for a sporting event where, think about the wait times of getting into that spot and, the clearances to be in that. If you can't possibly track every individual that walks into the lawn and where they're going and what they might leave, they're not going to allow it. So to think about doing that for 20,000 people or 10,000 or 5,000 or whatever, I personally wouldn't want it to happen just for the fact of, like, that's that building, there's a lot of nefarious people that would want to do some shitty, crazy stuff. And, to allow them on there just for a sporting event, I'm like, bro, come on. But whatever.
100%.
But it would be unique. And if I got the opportunity to go work the event, I think that'd be pretty cool. I would do it. I would do it just for the spectacle of it, for sure.
Regardless of where you stand in politics or whatever, like, dude, you'd want to be there. Like, it's a once-in-a-lifetime deal, so... Yep. Anyway, all right, listen, my phone's blown up. I got to get back to work here. They're wondering where I'm at, and I got to go. We got a lot of stuff going on. The week of a fight is so much fun behind the scenes.
The GM life is different.
Oh, dude, there's so much going on when you're talking about, like, medicals that have to be done, travel issues that pop up the week of, hotel rooms, flights, ground transportation, like, all the stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with just, like, putting a fight together and making fights or whatever. But, man, I absolutely love it, man. I'm honored that I've been given this opportunity.
So when Dana talks about the logistics of the White House, you could be like, bro, I know. I get it.
I've
been there.
We were just doing the same thing at the Hard Rock. Same exact thing, bro. You know what I mean? Like, I feel you, man. I feel you.
I see you, bro.
You know what I mean? I'm telling you. It was literally the exact same. I mean, like, yes, you're talking about Secret Service, but we got the Hard Rock Security that has certain requirements here as well. You know what I mean? Like, so we're kind of doing the same thing. Yep. You know what I mean? Yep. We're kind of doing the same thing. Yep. And, you know, you've got a president that you've got to look out for. We've got a president, Brad Bolton, that we've got to look out for. You know what I mean? It's all like, well, I'm right there with you, dog. I'm right.
Yep.
All right, listen, I get to work. We appreciate it. Hopefully everybody enjoys the fights this weekend. As I said, Abu Dhabi daytime fights are always incredible, and we appreciate you giving us a moment of your time. Thanks for listening.
At Penn Station East Coast Subs, your ears may hear, and your craving deep down inside hears.
Penn Station's cheesesteak is grilled to order with 100% USDA choice steak and sautéed veggies. Piled high on that legendary bread, topped with aged provolone and served melty and hot straight from the oven.
So when you hear, your craving knows.
Time for Penn Station, and don't forget the fresh cut fries.
Penn Station.
Love your sub.
Apartment People, Champion, the trusted name in Columbus Living, brings you the District of Berkshire.
Man, it will be fun to live there, right by Tanger Outlet Malls. Oh my God, great location too, getting to and from Columbus, and a great deal right now.
Free rent until next year. Free rent until next year.
He ain't lying. Move in now, you don't pay rent until next year.
The District at Berkshire, available now at livewithchampion.com. That's livewithchampion.com. That's livewithchampion.com.